the first Parsha. The first Parsha, very exciting. I looked back at last year, and it seems like we didn't have Pshischan the Parsha on Bereshis, because I think the timing didn't work out. But now we have the opportunity to learn some Pshischa on Parshas Bereshis. Interestingly enough, when I look through my go-to Sefer, I'm going to have to mix up the Sfarim now, because now that we're going to go through the Parshas again, you're going to have to try new ones. But this Sefer from Iturei Torah, from Rav Aaron Yaakov Greenberg, there's no Sfas Emes in it, which is interesting. So there's definitely what to be said for the Sfas Emes. I just didn't take a look. But let's go through a little bit of the Parsha here. Most of it is actually from the first half of the Parsha, about Adam and Chava. If you look at interesting Midrash, well, first let's talk about the word Adam. So we know that Hashem says, Nasa Adam etzalmenu kidmusenu, right? We should make man in our image, whatever that means. And we'll get to in a second what was some of the discussion. It sounds like Hashem was discussing it in some kind. But if you just look at the word Adam, says Rav Simcha Banim, Adam, usually when we think about the word Adam, so we think of it in terms of Adama, right? The land. Because he was made from, right, the Adama, from the land. Says Rav Simcha Banim, it's not true, or at least there's another way to look at it, which is that Adam is Milashon Dimyon. Dimyon is sort of the intellect or the imaginative faculty of a person. At least that's how it's used nowadays. But as you'll see, he means a little bit more than that. V'ha'aleph nosefa. Sometimes an aleph could be extra, usually more in Aramaic, but I guess also in Hebrew. Yitzron ha'adam al kol beruei ha'olam hu bekoach dimyonel. The power which a person has over an animal, not necessarily control, but the extra skill or the extra ability that man and woman has beyond the power of any other animal is the fact that they can think deeply about things, right? The imagination process. He says that kikol nimsa min hamitzam eno masik elas atzmo bilvad. The only thing that an animal can understand is itself, right? It feeds itself, it survives itself, it somehow protects itself. That's its only way to understand the world, is through itself. V'ilu ha'adam, but when it comes to man, nivra b'koach kolel me'elyonim v'tachtonim. Man is created from not only the Adama, not only from the ground, but also me'elyonim, also from the sky, v'hu ro'eh u'medame. And he is the one who can see and who can compare. Ro'eh u'medame, right? You see something, you compare it to something. I'm actually reading an interesting book now. What's it called? It's called Better, Faster, Smarter, I think. I believe by Charles Duhigg, who also wrote Power of Habit, which I loved. This is good, but he talks here about, you know, he talks in the book about how when you look around the world and you go through different experiences, so you get used to sort of categorizing different realities, right? So that you can sort of, he calls it something, you can prepare mentally prepare for the possibility of something happening. He talks about different examples of successful athletes who can properly imagine something which is going to happen in the world, going to happen in their game that they can be successful at. The Heath brothers talk about this in Power Moments. And I also read a book recently called Range by David Epstein, who talks about this in terms of the ability of chess players to work quickly through chess games because they've seen so many instances of it. So here too, says Rav Simcha Banim, that's what makes a person so unique. A person has the ability to imagine realities in the world and to compare them, contrast them to what he's already seen or what he or she has expected to see. Right, that's the ability of man. An animal can only see what's in front of him, can only see what's right, readily available, but doesn't necessarily have the imaginative process to compare, to contrast, to expect things in a theoretical way. V'hu roeh u'medam u'mibein meivin u'masig Maven Umesig, as Devarim Shemichutz Legufa, we can understand things that are outside of himself, that are detached from himself, detached from really reality. Zehu, and that's what it means, and this is an interesting way to read the Pasuk. Nasa Adam Bitzalmenu Kidmusenu. Right? We always think that Adam comes from Adama. But if you look at the Pasuk, it says, Nasa Adam Bitzalmenu, in our image, Kidmusenu is usually translated as our image, Demus Yokno, the image of a person's face. That here says or Simcha Bar, no, it means Kidmusenu, like Hashem's ability to theoretically imagine things and then create them into the world. So too the Adam, the person, also has that imaginative process. Nasa Adam Shiya Bokoach Medame. He can compare things, lahavin dimoy mitoch dimoy, to compare things within other comparisons, lahasik lahask mitoch dimayon, he can use his imagination to understand things on an intellectual level. Very interesting way to understand the essence of man. Adam, personhood, is all about that ability to really think deeply about the world that we're in, and not just work with our instincts like an animal does, which is all about yourself. Moving on to how the Medrash understands this pasuk, however, so there's one Medrash that says Amar Rabbi Simon. Rabbi Simon explains Bisha Sheba Kadosh Baruch Hu Livro as Adam Harishon, when Hashem came to create the first man. So what exactly this Medrash means, I can't tell you for sure, but we can learn something from it nonetheless. So Hashem wanted to create man, and he goes to the attribute of Chesed. And Chesed says, and he says, should we make man? And Chesed Omer Yivra Shehu Gomel Chasadim. You should create man because he's going to do Chesed, right? Chesed has a bias towards his own. Think about, by the way, this is the basis of that movie Inside Out, right? That cartoon about all the different personality traits. Right, so Hashem goes to Chesed. He goes to Chesed and he says, "What should we do? Should we create man or not?" And Chesed says, "Yeah, we should create man because he's going to do good things. He's going to be kind to other people." The MS and truthfulness, honesty comes along. Omer Al Yivra, you shouldn't make man. Shekulo Shkarim, man is full of lies, full of saying falsehoods. So you shouldn't create man. Then he goes to Tzedek. He goes to righteousness. And he says, should we create man? Omer Yivra Shu Oset Tzedakos. Yes, you should, because he's going to be persons can be righteous. They can be pious. So they're going to do piety. They're going to do righteous acts. And therefore, we should create man. And then lastly, they go to Shalom. Shalom, peace. And Shalom comes and says, Omer Al Yivra, you should not create man. Dekule Ketata. Men are just going to fight with each other. People are just going to always get in conflict, and it's going to be a constant battle. There's never going to be any shalom in the world, which is, you don't have to look far for that concept. But what happens? So Ma'asa Kadosh Baruch Hu asked the Medrash, Natal Emes v'shlichu la'aretz. Hashem takes the attribute of truth and throws him to the ground, and thereby creates man. Two against one. You've got Chesed on the one hand, and you've got Chesed and Tzedek beating out Shalom, right? Both Chesed and Tzedek said you should create man. Shalom said you shouldn't. And Emes was the one that made it a tie game. He throws Emes away, and he says, this one's out. Very interesting. So what's the obvious question that all Chasidic Mefarshim ask? Why did he throw away Emes and not Shalom, right? Because if it was a two against a two, so then he could have thrown away both Emes and Shalom if he was really trying, right? So first of all, why does he ask the question? And why does he throw away Emes and not Shalom? So two approaches on that. One, they really build on each other. But first from the Talmud, from Menachem Mendel of Kutz, the Kutzker Rebbe. He says, Ma to'ela shehishlich rakas ha-emes. Why does it matter if you threw down Emes, you threw down truth, you threw down honesty? Hare Nishar HaShalom. You still have the argument of Shalom, right? The peace still has his argument that man is going to fight with each other. Shoresh HaMachlokas, who says Rav Nachman Mendel, the basis of all debate, the basis of all disagreement, of all argument. Shekol echad lochem leman ha'emes shalo. Every single person thinks that what they have is truth. I have my truth, and only my facts are my facts, right? And the other person says, no, my opinion is the fact. I believe I'm true. My opinion is the truth. Aval imdochem es ha'emes hatzida. Hatzida, or I don't know how to say that word, hatzida. I think it means like to the side. If you throw emes to the side, you get rid of that concept of people thinking that only their opinion is emes. Shuv ein amalariv. Once you understand that your opinion is not the only possible truth, or not the only possible option for being true, so then there's nothing to fight about. Because you realize that maybe you're not right. And you realize even though you have an opinion, it's not necessarily the case that your opinion is the truth and the other person is not true. And therefore, ein machlokes. And if you don't have MS in the way of that discussion, so then there's almost naturally going to be shalom. Says V'nachman L'katzke Rebbe, V'ein lo l'shalom l'mal l'katrig. There's nothing for shalom to go against. Hashem throws away MS. He throws away that concept that there can only be, that every person thinks that only they're right and the other person can't be right. Once you get rid of that concept, so then there's going to be shalom. Because even if you disagree, as long as you hold on to the notion that maybe you're wrong and you don't have an objective opinion, but you only have a subjective opinion, so then there's going to be shalom. It's interesting, you look at the word shalom. The word shalom comes from the word shalem. Shalem means, and as I always think about it, shalem means complete like a puzzle, right? Different puzzle pieces don't look the same. The only way that you can be complete is if they are different. They have to be different. So when two people have different opinions, that's when you really have shalom. You can only have shalom when you're really completing each other, when you're supplementing each other. If every piece is the same, so then they don't actually interlock. They don't connect together, they just happen to overlap. That's not shalom. That's just everybody's the same. Shalom means when you're different and you can nonetheless get along. So says the Rav Simcha Banim, continuing from the Katzke Rebbe, Im sila ke kadosh baruch hu asa emes shalot ta'akiv es b'riyas ha'adam, lam lo asa kach gam l'shalom, sha'af hu haya ba'osa itza. Why didn't Hashem get rid of shalom? Says the Rav Simcha Banim in a similar vein, Ela lo sila ke kadosh baruch hu asa shalom, b'ipnei shebil adav lo yuchal adav l'hiskayim. He can't get rid of shalom because you need to, the world needs to endure. V'ha'ikar, Kishemirabim shalom, kishemarbim shalom umachzikim oso. When you give more and more peace to the world, machzikim oso magim sof kosof bemuktam obemuchar. Sooner or later, which is interesting the way that they say it, that sounds like an English phrase. Bemuktam umuchar. Sooner or later, when you have so much peace, you will ultimately come gam el ha'emes. Right, so the Katzke Rebbe is saying that when you get rid of MS, you'll get shalom. Rav Simcha Banim is saying when you get rid of MS, you'll find it ultimately. You'll find it ultimately with the shalom. So it's only a problem. MS and shalom, according to Katzke Rebbe, and according to Rav Simcha Banim, is only a problem when you assume both of them right at the outset. But if you're going to have one or the other, so then the shalom can bring you to the MS, or ultimately, not seeing the emes according to the Katzke Rebbe will bring you to the shalom, which is always interesting the way that they come to similar but different conclusions there. But the point is that emes is based in shalom. It's not based in a person who thinks that their own opinion is emes. And it's more interesting for Simcha Banim is that truth is something which you're committed to in tandem, right? You're committed to it together. You're not committed to it as an individual, but rather it's something that you have to find with somebody else. That's what shalom leads to MS. And this is connected to something that Rav Mordechai Yosef Lein of the Me'ah Shiloach says on perhaps the most explicit example of this, not from a medrash, but instead from an actual pasuk. As we know, the pasuk tells us, "Vayomer Hashem Elokim lo tov hayos adam levado." It's not good for man to be alone. Aseh lo ezer. I'll give him a helper. But then he adds one more word, kinegdo. How are you going to be a helper if it's connect out, if he's a helper, so he's with you. He's not then she's with you. She's not opposite you. And if it's connect out, if she's opposite you, then she's not with you. What does it mean? Ezer connect out. So says Meshilach, as we've been saying, Bihor Anyan. Kichen haya ratzon habore. This is the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sheyitzmach la'adam ezer, that he created for a person a helper, v'siyua, and something, an assistant, midavar shehu kenegdo, through someone who is against him, kamo hatalmid l'rav, just like a student to his Rebbe. Anyone who, those who are in the daf, let's see, we've got three Lomdei Hadaf with us. So you saw this morning, there was a whole discussion about when can a Talmud disagree with a Rebbe, right? Does it have to be before? Oh, we got four. We've got four. I see Leonard wasn't here this morning, but Leonard's also in the Daf. And then I see David in the background there. So there you go. We've got four here. So those of you who are in the daf, you know from this morning, there was a discussion, can you disagree with your Rebbe before you actually act based on his psak, or do you have to wait until after you act to ask him a question? So here too, the purpose of a Rebbe, the purpose of a Talmud is to ask those questions. You have to do it in the right way, which is how the Gemara talked about it this morning. But the purpose of the Talmud is to challenge the Rebbe also. And this is a famous Gemara. I think I've quoted, I probably talked about it before at some point. The Gemara Bava Metzia tells us on Daf Pei Daled, she Rebbe Yochanan had a Chavrusa named Rish Lakish. And Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish were the best of Chavrusas, despite they had somewhat of an interesting past. And they used to argue about everything, which is why when you find in the Gemara, oftentimes they're found together. Not today's daf, although Rabbi Yochanan is mentioned. But Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish are always arguing with each other. And when Rish Lakish dies, somehow, you know, Rabbi Yochanan's fault, not going to get into it right now. But when Rish Lakish dies, Rabbi Yochanan cried and cried and cried. Bacha b'moso shel Rish Lakish, sha'al shehitrid oso al kol meimra shelo. He cried over the fact, this is the Meir Shilach's touch on it, he cried over the fact, not that he had it, that he lost, that Rish Lakish died necessarily, but also over the fact that every time they would learn together, Rish Lakish would ask him 24 kashas on every single statement. Rish Lakish would always ask him 24 questions. And then what happens? And that would cause Rabbi Yochanan to answer all 24. He didn't want to be consoled by Rabbi Elazar. Why? What did Rabbi Elazar do? Rabbi Elazar was a yes man. Rabbi Elazar, every time Rabbi Yochanan said something, Rabbi Elazar would say, oh yeah, that sounds very good. Here's a brisa that sounds just like that. Here's a proof to the fact that you're right. Rabbi Yochanan says, I already know that I'm right. I don't need somebody else to tell me that I'm right. I need someone to tell me that I'm wrong. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan thought was the purpose of a chavrusa. Says the Meir Shilach, Zehu chok bebria kula. That is the law of nature. The law of nature is Dafka hahitnagdut yotzeret achdut. Beautiful phrase. Specifically, the opposition is what creates unity. You have to be able to disagree. You have to be able to oppose each other in a civil way, in an understanding way, not in a way that you think you have MS and the other person thinks that they have MS and you just continue to argue, but rather in a way where you understand you're both trying to get to the same place. The question is, are you going to get there through your reasoning, or are we going to get there together through reasoning through it back and forth? It's a famous, you know, story that I think I said also by Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter, the Cardinals, came in to understand a little bit of Jewish learning. How do you get them to learn like that? They once came into the Beis Medrash. This is before my time. They came into the Beis Medrash, and the Cardinals saw that all the Chavrusas were arguing with each other. And then right after that, they would all go and eat lunch together. So they said, Rav Schechter said, that's the secret. They understand that they're not They're not fighting over their own personal, you know, stake in the Torah. They're fighting over the Torah of Hashem. They want to both get to the same destination. The question is your opinion going to get us there, or is my opinion going to get us there? They're working together in opposition. So says the Me'ah Shiloach, Dafka hisnagdus yotzeres achdus. Specifically, that opposition is what creates unity, when you can understand each other, that you're both working towards the same goal, even though you're against each other in a specific instance or specific opinion. That's what will ultimately create unity. Says Me'ah Shiloach, that's implicit in this pasuk. Aselo ezer kenegdo, she's going to be a helper that's opposing you. And that's exactly true with all couples. That what makes people better, what makes a couple stronger, is when they're able to disagree and nonetheless come to a resolution without getting too emotionally involved, to overrule each other or to get upset at each other, because you know you're both trying to accomplish something that's valuable and worthwhile. No one's trying to hurt the other person. Chas v'shalom. So that's a few ideas based on the creation of man and the creation of woman in terms of making sure shalom is coming from shalim, that different pieces fit together to create a complete picture. Lastly, I want to tell a story of Rav Simcha Banim. This is a story that's actually brought down in this sefer from Rav Yitzchak Mivarka, who was a Talmud of Rav Simcha Banim. They might have been contemporaries, but a Talmud. Because Rav Yitzchak Mivarka and the Kotzker Rebbe, I think, were contemporaries. They were sort of different personalities. Either way. So the story I know of is from Rav Simcha Banim. So maybe Rav Yitzchak Mivarka is quoting him here. But the story goes that one of the Hasidim in Pshischa once came to Rav Simcha Banim. And they said, Rebbe, I don't understand. I work so hard every single day to put on tefillin, to try to make a living, to try to still learn Torah, even though making a living is very difficult. My next door neighbor is a secular Jew. He doesn't put on tefillin. He never tries to learn Torah. And look at him. He's got this big fancy house. He's got a nice car. I don't know, back then, I don't know what the equivalent of a car would be. He's got a beautiful snuff box. I don't know. insert your own 19th century equivalent here. I don't know what fancy things they showed off with, but he's got all these riches and he doesn't keep any halachas. So Simcha Banim told him, you know, it's very interesting when you look at the aftermath of the Eitz Hadas story. Look at the aftermath of the Eitz Hadas story. So we know that Adam gets punished because he's got to now work hard for his vegetation. He's got to work hard for all the food he has to eat to sustain himself. Hashem's not just going to make grown trees like in Gan Eden. And Chava, in order to create the rest of the world's population, she's going to have childbirth pains. What's the punishment of the Nachash? Hashem tells him, Vayom Hashem Elokim al Nachash ki asisa zos arur atar mikol behema. You're the worst of all the animals. Umikol chayasa sadeh al gechoncha selech. You're going to now sliver on your stomach, v'afar tochal, and you're going to have to eat dirt all the days of your life. Says Rav Simcha Banim, is that such a terrible punishment? He has to eat dirt. There's dirt everywhere. Adam has to work hard. He's got to toil. He's got to plow the field. He's got to plant the seeds. He's got to, you know, irrigate the field. He's got to properly harvest it. He's got to know, he's got to learn things. It's hard for him to get food. But the snake, what does the snake have to do? He turns left, he's got food. He turns right, he's got food. Anywhere he's going, there's always going to be dirt everywhere. Says Rav Simcha Banim, what kind of punishment is that? That he gets to eat dirt. It would be wonderful if man could eat dirt. Says Rav Simcha Banim, you know what the problem is? The problem is that when you have all the food you need, when you have everything you need, it means you don't need Hashem. There's nothing reminding you that Hashem is the creator of the world. There's nothing reminding you that you need Hashem in your life. You know why the Nachash was given dirt as a meal? Because Hashem didn't want to hear from him. Hashem didn't want the snake to reach out to Hashem and say, Hashem, I need food. Hashem didn't want to hear from him. It was a punishment because Hashem was saying, I don't want to have a relationship with you. I don't want to be connected to you, so I'm giving you something which you're going to be fed for your whole life, so that I never have to hear from you. And he says to this man, it's true, you might not be as successful as you wish, but when you look at your next door neighbor and you see his fancy car, you see his fancy house, and you see that he doesn't care for anything but himself, know that that's exactly what Hashem wanted. Hashem, because of his activities, wanted to give him everything in this world so that he didn't have to hear from him. Because Hashem doesn't want a relationship with him. Theologically, this is obviously a little troubling. And how do we square it with things that go on in the world and how we're supposed to try to be successful and support for ourselves? Obviously, a lot of it comes down to the perspective and the way that you get to your own sustenance. But either way, this is what Rav Simcha Banim said to console his Talmud based on the punishment of the Nachash. I might have talked about this before. I think I might have talked about this because I'm now remembering that I quoted from Fiddler on the Roof. Did I ever quote from Fiddler on the Roof on a drasha? I might have said this once. Right, Tevye says, if I were a rich man, at the end of the song, what does he say? Would it spoil some vast eternal plan if I were a wealthy man? So Rav Simcha Banim's answer is yes, because then you'd stop singing to me. The plan is that you shouldn't have everything you need, because then I won't hear your songs. I won't hear what you're saying anymore. That's the punishment of the Nachash. That's the punishment for those who have everything and don't realize it's from Hashem. It's because Hashem doesn't want to hear their voice. He doesn't want to have that relationship with them. So a few interesting ideas from the Parsha. Number one, we said from Adam, the greatness of Adam is the fact that we can imagine things, we can prepare things, we can think deeply about things, even if it's not directly affecting us right now. We talked about Chesed, Emes, Tzedek, and Shalom. How when you throw away Emes, you'll ultimately have Shalom. Naturally, you don't have to throw away Shalom. Alternatively, if you throw away Emes, but you have a lot of Shalom, so you'll end up at the Emes. We said that's the same thing as Ezer Kenegdo of the Me'ash Shiloach. That opposition breeds unity when you do that opposition properly. And then lastly, we saw from Rav Yitzchak Mivarka, probably quoting from Simcha Banim of that story, that the punishment of the Nachash is that Hashem doesn't want to ever hear from him again, and therefore he gives him everything he needs. An interesting concept, hard theologically, but very, very, maybe it was a strong consolation to that student. Okay, everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos Bereishis. Yiratzeh Hashem, this cycle of Torah should bring a lot of Torah learning, and we'll continue from Noach with more Pshischa on the Parsha. Shkoyach, everyone. Shkoyach, have a good Shabbos. Okay.